We want nine. We want nine. We want nine. Brings you
Phoenix City.
Welcome to Phoenix City. As you can tell, Patrick isn't here. But
it's not a break from usual. That's pretty standard by now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is getting that way, but I'm trying to keep him involved. As you can tell, it's me, Frosty. I'm joined by regulars Dave and Cam.
Hello, hello.
Good evening.
And we do have one extra seat being filled by the inimitable Ben Sigmund. Hey, Ben.
G'day. How's it going?
Calling him Ben. Mate, that just sounds wrong.
I know.
Can you do that again? Just say Siggy.
Do you prefer we call him Benjamin?
Benjamin.
Do I look
Benjamin
like his
mum?
No.
No, my mum calls me that.
Yeah.
How you doing, Z?
Nah, good, good, good. Yeah, it seems funny when someone calls you Ben. It's like, is that me or is...
Yeah. Oh, sorry, it's like Deanna probably calls you Ben, or does she genuinely call you Siggy at home?
No, she only calls me Ben. It's actually quite... She says, I can't call you Siggy. It just sounds wrong.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it seems fair seeing as that be her as well and the kids.
Yeah.
Well, no, they call him Dad.
Yeah. I'm trying to get my little boy actually... like Siggy Jr. and he's like not having a bar of it. He's like, no, Dad, I'm Cam. Siggy. Oh, nah, doesn't rate it.
It's disappointing.
No. Yeah, we'll get there.
Two-footing to motivate? Or?
No, I tried that.
Isn't he a golfer? I'm sure I saw something about golf with Cam.
No, he's getting amongst it. He's he did play soccer in his, like, when he was about six, and he came running over to me halfway through the game, and he's like, Dad. I'm like, Yeah, what's up? He says, there's a Qantas playing up there. And I was like, nah, football's not for you, mate. You're clearly not into it. He's rocking the golf and he's loving it, eh? So I want to just support him with whatever he does.
Spotting that kind of stuff, he's probably a cricketer because you get so much downtime in cricket. And honestly, you could just steer off into the space and no one would know any different.
Oh, yeah. If you don't mind waiting for like 4 hours on the sideline, just...
Nah, I'm not having that.
No. You can be caddy. You can just walk around carrying his gear. See, that's quite nice.
We had a nice little gentle walk in the park.
Yeah.
How's everything else going? Obviously, the family sounds pretty tidy.
Yeah, no, everything's good. Work's good. I think it's coming up 3 years retired now from the Phoenix. And I guess I'm just sort of now finding my feet with work and, you know, being home. It's just sort of tough being home all the time, you know. Like, you can't sneak away for the weekend and say to the wife, I'm off to play. And it's certainly changes. And I don't miss it, but... you know, sometimes you think, could I go back out and do it at this age? But, yeah, leave it to the other boys, I think.
So, obviously, it's probably a bit of an interesting feeling seeing the boys playing fairly well and the boots aren't getting a bit of polish or something?
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, like, for the last couple of years, it's been tough to watch, but this year's been unbelievable. It's been enjoyable. Mark's got the boys playing super well. And, you know, the other night when they went and played Central Coast and ripped them up 8-2. It was kind of sad to see our little, I think our record was
6-0.
Yeah. You know, so to see that get overtaken was a little bit sad, but good on the young lads.
That's actually a really good segue, to be honest, because only one player playing in that game last night was playing during that 6-0.
I'm not having that, mate. Part of the Defenders Club, a 6-0 is always better than an 8-2.
Yep, are you putting yourself in a Defenders Club with professional footballers?
Oh, no, there is a Defenders Club and we're just there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%, yeah. They conceded two. It's not good enough.
Yeah. I bet they got a rocket for it too. So
and way to ruin my segue, mate. Well done.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
You want another go?
No, thank you.
You sure?
You're the host.
I'm not a host.
That is true.
8-2, that was not a bad result. Did you see it coming? I mean, you must be involved with the boys a little more than most people. Are you still dealing with them at a professional level as well?
Yeah. Like, so I go in there once a week and we talk about their values. So they've set their values for the year, and it's my job to go in each week to make sure they're living by them, you know. So I challenge them, and then I actually pick a winner of the person that I think's lived by the values the best over the week. So we do that each Monday or Tuesday after the weekend. And it's one of those ones where you're not sure which way it's going to go, because Central Coast is struggling. Never want to be the bottom of the table. Like, it's, I remember being there a few times and it's like, you just don't want to get the wooden spoon. So I was thinking they'd probably get up for it a bit more personally, and they could have nicked something, but you know, as soon as two or three went in, the Phoenix just absolutely steamrolled them.
So you've obviously been involved in the culture side of the club this year. What's been different? I mean, obviously you, but you know, go on, plug the business, mate.
This is a great chance to plug it. Yeah. It's good.
No, I 100% like, it's probably 95% Mark Rudin. I just think that he has come in wanting to prove that he's good enough to be coaching at professional level and professional coach, and he's left no stone unturned. He's been outstanding in everything he's done. He's a great communicator. He's the boys get him and understand him, and he's managed to also, you know, get a good team out on the park. And you know, it's been enjoyable to watch. And you know, I know we're hearing all these rumours, but it would be so sad to see him go.
It must be interesting seeing your old running mate Dura still out there and looking pretty sharp, all things considered.
He is. He's blowing me away. I can't believe that he just keeps playing week after week, no injuries. I heard the other week that he had a, you know, I think it was a grade one or grade two groin tear. And he had a week off because he got suspended with his yellow card. And then he played the following week and he's good as gold. Like, for a 37-year-old to mend, even just with a tear, within about, you know, 10 to 14 days is quite outstanding.
And a groin tear is pretty niggly too.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so that just shows you, like, he's a bit of a crazy sort of dude that, one, he looks after his body, but just it's unreal that he can go without being injured and not get any long-term injuries for pretty much his career at the Phoenix, really, when you look back. He has not had many long-term injuries.
You could almost say he's bulletproof.
Oh,
you're way really? Too proud of that.
I am. I had to. I'm sorry.
I'm going to talk over that now.
Oh, okay, fine.
I was just going to credit Dura for using that, getting that accumulated yellow for getting rid of, you know, give himself a week off to get the groin going.
Yeah, that was smart, I have to say. Yeah.
That was the best yellow of the season, to be fair. It took so long for the ref to give it. It was just, he's going to stand there until you do it, man. Come on.
At least he had the smarts not to do a Ramos and actually come out and say, yeah, I deliberately accumulated that yellow so I didn't have to play.
Yeah, you should have.
So now should we go back to the bullet incident?
Yeah, go on.
You sure?
Yeah, you're in charge. You're okay. The host.
So, yeah, I mean, we were just talking before the pod that you hadn't heard this story either, Ziggy. I'll give the story, actually, just in case someone hasn't heard it. But Dura at age 17?
17, yep.
Yeah, playing, I believe, a junior or a trial game for Sydney Olympic. Just on the field, putting on his jacket, all of a sudden gets hit by something. Turns out to be a 22 bullet through the chest. And he didn't think that that was kind of worth mentioning. I mean, we've had him on the pod, how many, twice?
Yeah. Oh, I think he's one of the most regular, now must be four times, five times.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure one of us has asked him a question like, what's the most unusual thing that's happened on the field?
Yeah, or any other stories you'd like to tell us that is worthwhile.
Yeah, and he's never thought, you know what?
That time I got shot playing football. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I'll be honest. If that had happened to me, it's the first story I'd tell everybody I met. Hey, I'm Cam. I got shot once.
Yeah,
here's the scar. That's pretty nuts, eh?
Yeah, I was quite interested that there's a photo of him at the back of the ambulance afterwards, just sitting there quite casual.
With an outstanding 1990s haircut.
Yeah. The original story, which obviously got shared around on Twitter and Facebook and stuff a bit first, was pretty fantastic. But then when he told the story as well to Stuff, he was still so just casual about it. Oh, yeah, it just went straight through and, you know, it was fine in a couple of weeks. It's like, what? You got shot. Like, you seem so like nonchalant about the whole thing. It's just crazy.
Isn't it? It must be pretty rough growing up in Newcastle, eh?
And they never found the guy who did it. Someone got hit on the golf course next door as well, and they just never found anyone.
Yeah,
crazy.
I thought that Dura's kind of response to that is like, oh, you know, there's just a random guy running around shooting people and like they never caught him. It's like, oh, you know.
Welcome Newcastle, Australia. Yeah.
Everything's trying to kill you there, so why not a guy with a gun?
We've got a bit of a WhatsApp group with all a few of the old Phoenix boys, and Vince Lear came in, and I thought it was quite funny. He says, Dura, I've roomed with you for like 8-9 years, and we've been on the piss a number of times, and you never came out with that piss story that I got shot. He's like, what? Surely it would have come out.
Have you guys not ever played I Have Never? Because, you know, that's what, that'd be your go-to, really.
Yeah, it's absolutely your go-to.
Because everybody else is drinking. Come on.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be doing that on tour.
No, but end of season functions.
Yeah, sure.
Team end of season dos.
I don't think you need an excuse for having a quiet one.
No,
probably. If you're playing I Have Never, can you still class it as a quiet one?
Yeah. Actually, I won't say that.
Yeah. Our philosophy was win or lose, get on the booze at the Phoenix for a few years, boys. Come on. Yeah.
No, those glory Ricky days.
We didn't want to say that.
Ricky ripped us if we got on the piss.
Yeah. Right, so that does bring us, obviously, to the reason Siggy is here tonight, and it's Jura's testimonial. So where is that again, Frosty? I think you have the details.
Yeah, I do. Wellington College is the venue, one of the halls in there. It's 7 p.m. on the 23rd of March, so that's a Saturday. Big night, Siggy.
Yeah, she will be. There's lots going on. I think there's already about sort of 9 or 10 ex-players coming back, so there's a good crew. You know, Vince Lear, Manny Musket, myself, Paul Eiffel.
Saw Brocky.
Yeah, Brocky's Jeremy, making the trip.
Jeremy Brocky's, he was one of the first to put his hand up, booked his flights. Mikey McGlinchey. I think there's a few surprises as well that we can't say about, that they are booked. And funny enough, Jura's like, I know who it is. And it's like, it's Eugene Daddy. It's like, nah, it's not Eugene Daddy. It's like, I know who it is. It's like, it's Tim Brown. I'm like, nah, it's not Tim Brown.
No, Tim's busy.
Yeah, it's like, and then so he's like, he thinks he knows, but he actually, to be fair, he doesn't. So it's quite exciting because Sarah was just giving me the heads up.
Is that check finally coming in for Terry, is it?
Well, I don't know, but I was having a chat to Drew, you know, organising everything, and I was all excited because there's so much going on, and I sort of gave him a bit of a hint that something was happening, and that's kind of how it all started when he went to Sarah about, you know, who's coming, and he hasn't got it yet. So
Daniel's got to be one of them.
He's already confirmed.
Oh, is he?
So that's not a surprise. It can be a surprise. Maybe we shouldn't be telling everyone everything, but there is a good lineup of ex players.
Those guys are all on Instagram doing it. So
they
seem quite keen.
It speaks volumes for the man that that Brox is keen to come back from South Africa. It's a hell of a trip for what will be a couple of nights off. So it speaks volumes for Jura as a player and a captain and a man that they're prepared to do that.
Well, a couple of nights off, one night on.
One night on the piss.
Yeah.
Or two.
Yeah, true. They're going to have the private night the night before and then the testimonial night.
You got your free passes sorted?
Yeah. Actually, Grandma just came through and she said she's going to pick the kids up Saturday morning, and she said, I'll just see you Sunday afternoon sometime.
Oh, nice.
Sunday evening. Macca's
Monday,
in hand.
Yeah. Monday morning.
No idea. Look, I just... I am looking forward to it. It's going to be a great night, and you couldn't go to a better man. And you forget that 11 years at one club is massive, you know, and, you know, what he's done for the club and what he's just done to, you know, personally, you know, to live away from home in terms of having no family support. His wife's obviously got 3 kids, Sarah, you know, and, you know, for him to be able to do what he's done for 11 years is something that needs to be celebrated.
Agreed. Yeah, for sure. I think we're all heading there too. Dave,
I'll be there. Cam will be there.
I'm working, so I kind of have to be there. But even if I wasn't working, I'd be there anyway. Yeah,
I think there's probably a fairly decent contingent from Fever going, if you're keen. There are more details on the Phoenix website. If you can't get hold of that, just tweet out to Courtney, probably on the official Twitter account.
Just to the official Twitter account. Or, you know, contact Siggy directly.
Give me a ring. Yeah. Or Ticketek.
Oh, and hold on. Look up his number. Yeah.
Ticketek.
No, there's definitely tickets available, and it's pretty easy to find the details on the website. But I think it'll be a good night. And
it should be a cracking one.
There's obviously seats at tables with dinner and drinks included, but there's also just kind of seats in the stalls as well. So don't think you're going to be priced out of the event, because that's definitely not the case.
Do we know prices roughly?
I think it starts from $50,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Starts from $50 where you, and the good thing is you know, you don't get a meal with that $50. Oh no, sorry. They've brought them down to $25.
Oh really?
So they were $50, I've halved that to $25. And there's an open bar there, so you can go up, get your drinks, cash bar, sorry, and you can go in.
I don't think it's $25.
Yeah, just hand over, get around the back.
Basically they're just letting him for free.
But yeah, there's a cash bar, so you can just grab what you want. And then the other thing they're gonna be doing is everyone's gonna be in the same sort of, you know, area. So everyone's sort of mingling, and there are different prices for different, you know, tables and dinner and meals and drinks and what have you. So, you know, it's pretty sort of, whatever you can afford, you can still go, and it's going to be a bloody good night.
So entertainment, some stories, hopefully some pretty solid ones. You've got them all lined up, written down, Siggy?
Hopefully there's some not safe for work ones.
Yeah, look, there's a live band, so there's a band going to be there. There's a quiz night with heaps of prizes. There's some top-notch prizes and auction items. And then, you know, look, once we get to about sort of midnight, I think we should all kick on to Red Square, Dirty Little Secret. Who knows? We'll be there somewhere.
I've actually managed to get a pass out for the entire day because I was hoping that Jura was going to do like Vin did for his. We had the game prior, so I managed to book out the entire day with the wife. So if there's no game, I can just put that a little bit later and book out into Sunday morning instead of Saturday night. So yeah.
Oh, good luck with that, pal.
You know it's not happening. You know my wife.
Yeah, I've already engaged Grandma. She's because the missus is away. So,
see, that's good. The missus is away. So yeah. You can kick on into the wee small hours and boys staying with grandma for the night.
Yeah, yeah. We'll wait and see if my lover can tolerate it. apart from that, you got anything else you want to dob Dura in for?
Not really.
Yet.
We've got a little bit of a prize in terms of some tickets can be won. So you might do that a bit later on,
yep,
will you?
Yeah, we'll announce details of that towards the end of the pod.
Yeah, and so tune in for that, and that'll be a couple of tickets that two people can win, so that'll be quite cool. And just get down there, support it, get amongst it, don't make any excuses. I think for a guy, who knows, he hasn't retired yet. How long is he going to be around for? Could be the last chance to have a good night with him as well.
Mm. We can't let you off scot-free. You've got to give us some juice on Euro. So how about you tell me the thing that was most frustrating about playing with him? Because obviously you two were out there together. I'm sure you got on each other's nerves a bit. What was the most frustrating that you did?
Most frustrating. I was always the angry one, and he was always the guy that was a good guy, sort of sweeping it all up and just calming things over.
I can agree to that because I've seen it up close and personal. So, yeah.
No, it was a kind of this – I was the bad cop probably, obviously, and he was a good cop, you know, but – it got to the point that, you know, towards the end of the career, it was such a good relationship that it was just amazing how much we knew about each other on the field, off the field. And, you know, that was probably one of the biggest things I missed about him was actually that relationship that we had formed, you know, and it does take time and it was special and certainly something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life anyway.
Have you noticed that he's kind of being more of a bad cop now that you're not there? Maybe you were holding him back a little bit.
He tries. He's not. He tries. Yeah. He's he has got a bit of anger in him, but nah.
It's kind of because maybe it's because Stephen Taylor is like literally both ends of that spectrum. So he has the real anger, and I remember seeing that when he made a massive tackle in the corner. But then when we score, I've never seen anybody that smiles quite as wide as that guy. So it's probably Jura's just trying to find that little balance in the middle there because he's. He's literally, what's the appropriate word to say?
Bipolar.
Yeah, that.
So even when Jura's trying to be the bad cop, you know, or put in a bit of a filthy challenge or whatever, he's not the sort to then stand over the guy giving him a spray. Whereas, you know, there's definitely been times like that, where, you know, you've gotten two-footed on a guy and then give him a spray as well. Jura's never going to be that guy.
Nah, but you'd be quite surprised though, like, Jura, I always felt he definitely always had your back, but he was one of those guys that does it without you sort of seeing it, you know, like he's probably like quite a smart guy, whereas I was probably the dumbest guy that would just say it in front of everyone, whereas he'd be chirping away, you know, on a corner whenever the guy come near and whatever it might be. And he got away with murder more, you know, like that's the type of guy he is. Hey?
Yeah. Did you ever give him grief that he just can't dive?
When you're harking back to that McGlinchey one from the weekend,
there was
aren't
the McGlinchey one, and there was one from a while back. He just gets clipped and just throws himself vertically and then collapses down like he's just been decapitated.
Like he's just been shot?
Oh, no. It's not even shot. He's like missing limbs. It's the funniest thing I've seen.
Yeah, he's that Mikey McGlinchey one was pretty shit, really, wasn't it?
It was hilarious. It was brilliant, actually.
The look on Mike's face when he did it, he just turned around and almost looked straight up at the camera and was just kind of like, whoops. He missed the whole dramatic scene behind him.
Well, it was legitimately a clip. There was definitely a foul there.
Oh, yeah.
If he'd seen the dive, he'd have probably been laughing as much as we were.
He's hit a mid-shin and Jura's gone straight up vertically. And you're kind of like, what?
Yeah. How do you volley a person straight up? When you're Wee Mac size. He's Wee Mac for a reason. So, yeah, funny.
I must admit, I'm quite surprised Wee Mac's volunteering to come back for this testimonial because he will get pelters.
Yeah.
It's No,
or is it just to the point of being a pity?
Yeah, it's tough when you just copped 8 goals. Hey? Yeah. Like, you probably just say nothing.
Oh, yeah. I think he gets a free pass.
And then, the interview, I don't know if you've heard it, with the interview with Mike Mulvey.
Oh, yes.
And,
yes.
Then the boys' chants and the song that they were singing was just outstanding.
What's the song?
What's that?
What's the song? Because you've obviously sung it with the boys. What's the song? The song that they were singing.
Oh, the Phoenix. We've just done it since day dot. Yeah. That I think Jura might have even brought that in actually right at the start. And
it's a very Aussie thing.
Yeah,
I've never come across it in New Zealand.
Yeah, and it's just stuck. We've done it every time we win. We do it, and obviously we do it if we're away or even at home. We used to leave the doors wide open, obviously, and sing it out. It's probably the best one I've heard. Actually,
I've heard it a few times, but not recently. But back in the day. And obviously when you've been leaving the doors open, and I've heard you guys belting it out quite loudly, but maybe they close the doors now. Maybe that's not why we don't hear it so often anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the interview's going on, it sounded like it was literally next door.
Yeah, it probably was. Yeah, how they set those things up. Like there's, I think, what was it? Eden Park had a spot to do them, but in QBE Stadium, it's literally in the players' tunnel. So like one team goes left, one team goes right, and the dressing rooms are right there, and they've set up the interview in the players' tunnel. You just can't see it because it's back inside the building. Oh, so there's every chance it could happen in a lot of those places, just because the space is limited.
I gotta say, sorry for Mulvey there, because it's like he's walking to the executioner's nose, being asked for any final words, and it's just like, and he gets the soundtrack to basically the worst night of his life.
He is sent off from his job by the team that has just spanked him, singing about it. That's
the sacking announcement was at 1 a.m, so there must have been some wrangling reasonably late into the night. That wasn't we sent it out straight after the game finished. There were a few hours of mulling that over first, so
please come and see the chairman's worst night. Yeah. When you finish with the team, please come and see the chairman. He'd like to talk to you. That's harsh, man. That really
did
is.
He the other thing that I couldn't work out was he getting escorted off the field?
Yeah, well, I saw that because there's a security guard with an arm around him.
Yeah.
Just after the full time whistle. I honestly don't know. It's certainly
been taken off
one.
And it's like the boss would like to have a word.
It might have just been we'll get you out of here before the fans turn on you, but it also might
there's
be
only six
need,
of them left.
You need to come talk to the the manager right now.
Yeah. You know? There was a record low crowd for the Mariners.
Yeah, it was like 3,000 or something.
3,780.
A lot of people left early, apparently. So,
Well, you kind of would, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm not one to do that, but I can. If you're 8-2 down, or at the time 7-0 down, I could imagine a pile of people getting up and walking.
It's a shame because they would have missed those two Mariners goals. Were good.
Yeah, they were. We'll get to those later, though. We'll tell you those later. Yeah, that's cool. Did you have a room with Jura?
No, I didn't actually. He was him and Vince Leah and. They were the main culprits together.
Yeah.
And, you know, they clearly don't get injured very often. Well, Vinny was a little bit, but they didn't miss many games really, so they tended to obviously be together most of the time.
Damn, I was hoping there's going to be some kind of dirt in there.
So basically
hit up Vinny for
Vinny. Gossip. Vinny would be top quality, yeah.
So pay your $25, get a ticket, and ask Vinny for the good gossip, basically.
and get some beers down him.
If Vinny's tested again is anything to go by, It was a goes on tour, stays on tour, Chatham House rule. So what they talked about that night stayed in the venue. So that meant they could tell some pretty good stories. And I could just see if it's going to go the same way this time, there'll be some pretty interesting stuff come out.
And, of course, Vinny's got a contract for Adelaide. So, you know,
no
incentive to
it's hold back.
Yeah,
that's nice.
There's heaps of other stuff, you know, like there's video footage from other players that can't make it, as well. You know, so it'd be quite cool. And there's been some cool little interviews that I've heard about that that Jura's going to get a bit of a surprise from as well. So, cool.
Ricky, is he one of them?
No comment.
It's Siri de Campos.
good call.
Right. Well, thanks for joining us, mate.
No worries.
Appreciate it. And we'll see you on next Saturday.
Yeah.
Tarada, obviously.
Thanks for having me. It is black tie event.
Yeah, true.
I think I'll be the only person that will get away with wearing jeans.
But don't get caught up in the black tie kind of thing, because I think everyone kind of got, you know, I'm only going in a suit, you know, like you don't have to go and hire one or rent one or anything. It's like,
let's go corporate. We're your corporate.
Just make sure you look good.
Yeah. I'll be wearing jeans, just letting you know, but I'm working, so I guess I get away with it.
You're a disappointment, Cameron.
I'm from Palmerston North.
You're from Highbury.
Yeah, that's
just quit talking it up. we've kind of ruined Ziggy's outro, but, you know, that's fine. Yeah, that's the story of our podcast, I think.
It's supposed to be a shambles. It's what we do.
It's what we do well. Thanks for coming, mate.
No worries. Thank you.
It's been great. But we will be asking for those stories.
No problem.
Okay, so I guess we don't segue back to 8-2, gents.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Unexpected, I think it's fair to say.
I thought there were goals in this game, but I was thinking, you know, 3-0, 3-1.
Yes. I thought we were going to win. I thought we'd win by 2 or 3. And I think that's a fair assumption for most people that we'd win by 2 or 3. We've been playing good football, but we've been playing very good teams recently. So to come off the end of that run and then end up and play bottom of the table Mariners, who have been atrocious for the majority of the season. I mean, one win in, was it 21 games is appalling effort.
Mm.
So the fact that we were playing them, it was a 95% us win, you know? And I just did not see us doing this.
Yeah, I didn't expect them to be quite that porous or put out that team either.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. Once you saw the lineups, the potential for a lot more goals was very real. They didn't put out a good side. They didn't play well. They haven't been playing well, and something needed to change. And I think an 8-2 is clearly...
It definitely changed.
Yeah, well, it's
got worse.
Well, they've lost the coach, but I think holding on to him any longer was going to be a problem, right? Like, he wasn't going to turn it around. He'd probably lost the dressing room, and that's why this kind of came to a head the way it did.
Yeah, do you think that they went out and played more aggressively? Because it certainly felt that way. It was just basically there was almost no midfield and almost no defence in almost both directions. There was a lot of attack.
100%. I think we... And I think it's confirmed by Rudan on the side saying be ruthless for the entire game and do not let up, because goal difference will matter later on. So I think that just says yes, they were very aggressive. And once they got that first fortuitous goal, but once they got that first goal, it was just like go, 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 and just not stop. And I think we all agree that 8-2 is actually flattering to the Mariners, and yeah, it could comfortably have been in double figures with Roy getting probably 6 of them.
Yeah, to be fair, I think it is flattering to them, but it's also, it's kind of, if they got more, it would have been fair for us to, it would have been like a 12-5 game, because I just didn't see enough defense. It was very porous at the ends.
I actually think the biggest issue was midfield, specifically midfield for the Mariners. They didn't have one.
Yeah.
So Wemac was playing the number 10, I think, position for them. But the person, I can't remember who was playing up front for them, the service was poor, and the service to Wemac was poor because there was nothing in behind him. And it comes down to playing young guys who just are not used to that level. They played the starting debut for that, really, for the little fella. I can't remember his
who
name.
Who makes Wemac look like a giant.
Yeah, he does. He's
under 5 foot, I believe.
They have to get custom-made shorts for the guy. No doubting he has ability, right? No doubting he's good on the ball and he has a good vision for pass. But throwing him into that situation where you're resting, well, not resting players, you are disciplining your starting players, it's quite hard on the kid. And it just showed that midfield for Mariners, we basically did what we wanted to.
So speaking of the discipline, this was Andrew Hall, who decided a night out on the Terps was a good idea while Instagramming it. He was with
David Carney.
Carney, yeah. So that's always testament to a good night. And then missed two training sessions, I believe.
Called in sick for the next two days' trainings, and then got told he was being punished once they had figured out that he'd actually been out on the Terps.
Yeah.
And then decided that in response to being punished, he was going to not turn up to the next training as well.
Yeah, that is not professional, and that doesn't help.
I mean, no, and I think that's part of what I was referring to when I was saying that Mulvey had lost the dressing room. I don't know that there's necessarily a wealth of information about him having definitely lost the dressing room, but when you've got a player acting like that, when you're bottom of the table, and, you know, I can understand that those players clearly didn't want to play for him anymore. You know, you're not acting like a petulant child like that, as experienced as Hall is, without a reason. There was some other stuff at play there, and you'd have to say the management might be that thing.
So I agree that he's probably lost the dressing room. That makes sense. However, I like to take this into the context of a normal, everyday 9-to-5 job.
Yep.
If I went out on the piss and I called in 2 days in a row hungover and my boss found out about it, I would be getting a warning, and I wouldn't be doing, and it wouldn't be bad on my boss. Hey, I might not like my boss. I might not get on well with him, but he's my boss. If I don't like it, find another job.
Yeah.
Simple as that. That is the most unprofessional thing you can do, especially when you've got so many young guys around that squad. Those young guys are looking up to people like Hull and Wemac.
And Matt Simon.
And Matt Simon, who have been there a long time. Matt Simon, the idiot who gets red carded for...
He's your club captain, I mean.
Exactly.
You're talking about a culture issue, and expected them to act to a higher standard when Matt Simon is the one setting the standard around that. I'm not surprised that there's some issues there.
Yeah.
And hopefully whoever hopefully the structures around that, including the manager, can sort some of that out. But yeah. Based on who they've appointed this week, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
They just have to we'll come back to that that point. But
we've got that's a whole other can of worms. I'm not sure what we want to open just yet.
I'm sorry. The guys, you have to take some kind of personal responsibility. You want to be a professional footballer, be a fucking professional footballer and show a level of maturity that says my job as a professional footballer is training. And that means I turn up every day to train. And if I train well enough, I get to play the game, and that's the bonus. Your job is training. You don't go out on the piss when you're training the next day and get so drunk that you can't train. That's as simple as that. It's like us going out on a Wednesday night and getting so hammered we have to call in hungover to our jobs the next day. And that is not okay.
So let's go back to the game. So we had, three goals in the first 21
minutes. Yeah, three goals. So Mariners actually started brightly. They had two really good chances. One of them came from Kuto spilling the ball, but then Meninchu did get his hands as a striker came through to move away from the goal. So they did actually start quite brightly. But once the fragility of that midfield was established, and it was established pretty, pretty quickly. Burgess and Singh were having an absolute field day in there. Once that was established and Roy created the own goal, then, yeah, it was only going to go one way. So, the own goal was the first one. I think it was about the eighth minute. Roy gets the ball on the left-hand side and just beats his man for pace. I think it was Melling that he was going around. Gets to the byline and cuts back towards the goal. Looks to cross, and the defender, whose name I'm sorry I don't remember, gets a leg to it, just trying to stop the cross coming in.
He's the young English kid.
Yeah, he gets unlucky. It's unlucky. It's come off his knee. It's gone flying into the goal. That happens in those situations often. So it's not one you can actually like put on the defender. He made a mistake per se.
He didn't quite run the right line. He needed to run outside the cutoff.
He didn't get his positioning particularly right. But again, that happens a lot, and so it's not one you're going to put on. He's going to feel bad about it. But you know, there's better players than him in world football that have done exactly that. So,
and the second one, I've forgotten.
The second one was the lob.
So that was beautiful.
Basically, it was a hoofed clearance from Golic. It was agricultural. There was no deliberate passing that. Striker was coming in for the ball. Golic just gives it a hoof. And
how's the Defenders Club feel about that description?
Yeah, that's legit. get it out of the danger zone, mate.
Yeah.
That's what your job is.
And so it's gone up to the right-hand side to an unmarked Roy. And it happened quickly.
Put it on his toes, you mean?
There's a couple of things that are going. I don't understand how Roy was so unmarked.
Yeah.
Like, I get there wouldn't have been a man on him because Mariners had the ball right up to the hoof clearance, right? So there wouldn't have been a man right on him. But there was so much time and space for him. There was no one within 20 metres of him.
I think it's not uncommon for those big diagonal wiper kicks. If someone's positioned out there, the problem is that the fullback and centre-backs who are looking to head it are kind of just backtracking, you know, they're moving backwards rather than turning and running. So that does create a bit of a gap if it does go over them.
Yeah, but the switch of play pass is effectively what you're talking about, is generally to the fullback bombing on down the right-hand side or down the left-hand side, right? In this case, on the right-hand side. Roy is nowhere near the sideline. He's about in line with the side of the box, just a long way out of the field.
If you can get it. Basically, so the fullback is still backtracking, thinking he's going to have to header it. It means that if he doesn't get a good head on it, it can be party time.
That definitely wasn't what happened here.
No, he didn't get anywhere near that.
It was too high. It was a huge looping ball. Anyway, so it's fallen to Roy, who's completely unmarked, and Kennedy's made a tactical error by looking to come and then realizing he's not going to get there.
He wasn't within 10 yards.
I don't know why he's taken the steps forward, because there was no chance of him ever getting there. And Roy has seen this and gone, well, I'll just put it over you, and does, and just lobs him beautifully from a long way out.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Dave, but as soon as that kind of position goes, it should be retreating to the...
Oh, you should be, but it's one of those ones where you might also be thinking my only option here is to try and stop him running it in. Because, I mean, Roy's not generally the sort to make a lobbed shot like that. He's not a guy who likes shooting from range. He prefers to bring it in close. And I think under normal circumstances, if, say, there was a bit of pressure from a defender within a few metres of him or whatever, he probably would be looking to run. But I don't think he's realised, he has all the time in the world to do whatever he wants. And by the time he does realise, he's in no man's land.
Yeah.
Because I think if there is a defender there pushing him wide or, you know, putting a bit of pressure on, Roy doesn't have time to see that, and maybe getting out might have been a more viable option. But by the time he thinks it through, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah,
that felt to me like it was the backbreaker for Mariners. I mean, going two down and inside, what was it, 18 minutes?
Or? That was, I think that was about 12 minutes. Yeah. The second goal came in about 12, 13 minutes, something like that.
And that just, and such an easy nothing goal as well.
Yeah.
Just felt like it killed them.
Yeah. Once that ball's with Roy, it's a no-win situation, really. I think even if the keeper retreats onto the line, Roy probably still scores anyway. Mm. It's just a different goal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's more just trying to make him take an extra couple of touches in case he uppies it.
Yeah, I was going to say this. Say this in relation to one of the later goals, but why they were playing such a high line against Roy Krishna? It's like they'd forgotten the guy can run,
and it's like they hadn't seen the first game against Sydney.
Yeah, and that goal, Roy's second goal, is exactly that. When we get to it, that's exactly what that is.
That was the pass by Burgess, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
That was a beautifully played ball. I mean, I think Burgess was. It showed. Having him over Rufa, in that we had so much more passing from deeper. He certainly has a long pass that Rufa doesn't.
Yep.
But I also think that our defensive fragility was a little more that, you know, we were playing a 10 back there who had good passing, but, you know, it isn't a strength to be a great
defender. We got away with it because it was the Mariners. But if you were playing Perth or Victory or Sydney, I'd say we'd have been a bit of trouble.
I think at a good 10 who can play back in those in between the lines here, we would have been interesting.
Yeah. So goal number three happened about the 21st minute. Was a fast break. So Roy has won the ball just inside our half with a tackle. Poor touch by the defender. And the ball has bounced off Roy and gone straight to Sarpreet. Sarpreet's running. He's got Williams on the right. And Roy carries on after the tackle, carries on down the left. So Sarpreet feeds to Williams. Controls it and turns back inside after the defender commits himself, and then he slots it nicely along the ground inside the near post past Kennedy, who had come out to close the angle, but there was nothing he could do about that one. So that was a really, really nicely taken goal. The fourth one was the one you've just talked about. So that was, Burgess.
I think just before we talk about the fourth one, the thing that strikes me about the first three is just how easy all three of them were.
Yeah.
They were really, really simple goals all inside that first 20 minutes. These weren't world beaters by any stretch of the imagination. The first one, bit of luck, but, you know, defender runs a bad line, Roy takes advantage and plays it off him a minute and in. The second one, bad positioning, no one marking anyone, just easy. And the third one as well, like it's a nice kind of turn back inside and shot from Williams, but he has acres of space in the box and it's just too easy. And I think at that point, this is where you're going, this could be an absolute bath. Mm. If we're going to walk through them like this for 90 minutes, this is going to be 20-0.
Yeah, and we did walk through them, and we just, our finishing was a bit prolific, I think.
So. Yeah, 20 minutes in, and you're seeing that broken back line. Oof, that gives me the willies.
Yeah, so the fourth one was that ball from Burgess, which was stunning, which puts that channel that Roy likes to run between the two central defenders, and they were turning like freight trains and... So the ball, I think Roy gets to the ball just before Kennedy does, and he gets a little lucky with the rebound. He regathers the ball, turns the defender, beats the defender, who are, you know, to fear coming back, flooding back into the box to try.
Yeah, he did a good job to make him turn.
Exactly. But. And then that finish, it was unnecessarily top bins. I love that. I love it when someone puts it top bins when they don't need to.
I wonder if that was because it was his left peg and he just went, I'm just sticking my laces through this. I'm close enough that it's not, you know, I'm not missing it. But.
Yeah, that is possible. But to be fair, in between the third and fourth goals, we had Singh had a chance where Roy and Singh, which was a great double save by Kennedy. Roy's had another one, the header, which Kennedy saved with his ass, which was, to be fair, he's done everything he can from that angle. Roy's got a great hit on it. And he's done the right things. He's hit it down. He's got unlucky because it's just bounced up and hit Kennedy in the ass. And Kennedy's made himself big as he can do from there.
He's in the right spot.
Yeah. And so that was good bit of goalkeeping. And by that stage, he deserved a little bit of luck because he was getting
He made some good saves. There were a lot of chances to make saves, but he made some good ones.
Yeah. Did you know that this is the third time he's conceded at least 7 goals in a game?
I didn't know that. But
As soon as it's more than 3, it's not on the keeper.
No.
This save, the one he makes with his ass, is the one that ends up winning save of the week from the A-League. But I thought the double save
Yes.
Was better, yeah. Personally. Yes. I totally. Thought that was.
Yeah, to put that, the second one from Singh, when he just made the save from Roy, they get their hand to get it wide of the post, that was really well done.
Yeah. Whereas the header, I'm like, it's a bit of luck. You know, you've got to be in the position to have that luck, and he does everything he can, but it felt more like luck, whereas the other one was genuine skill, good keeping.
Yeah.
Kennedy, to me, he feels like he's the, when he's playing on instinct, he's not a bad keeper, but as soon as he has to think about positioning or time or something like that, it doesn't come naturally. Like, he's just a step too slow.
Mm. And I think other than the second goal, I think the fact he has no defenders in front of him out of blame for most of these goals.
Yeah,
the second one, you can put some blame on him for sure. But again, a man is well unmarked and probably shouldn't be. But much of the rest of it, he does the best he can. And you don't expect keepers to be saving these.
You really, really don't. I totally agree. So that was halftime, 4-0. Unexpectedly 4-0, but, you know, awesome 4-0. Yeah, we were good for it. Should have had more. Should have been 6 or 7 at halftime. And
they probably got exactly that talk when they went in, I'd say. Because, I mean, as a coach, you'd be going, okay, first of all, get the win. The win's pretty tidy now. There's no way that Mariners are in disarray. So
they're unlikely to get 4, you know. They might get a couple, but they're unlikely to get 4.
But also now you're thinking with Adelaide, they're only 2 goals ahead of us. We're 4 up. We get a couple here and we get ourselves a buffer. Mm. So, and basically that's exactly what they came out and did.
Well, I think this is what would have made Rudan happy, is the fact that they did do exactly that in that second half, and they came out and just kept going.
Yeah, I think the one thing that will have made him sad, though, is I'm sure that at halftime there was a talk about let's keep it tight at the back. You know, we're up by this, we've got it in the bag, but let's not slip at the back there. And that's not to say that they did slip, because I think particularly that first goal, there's not a huge amount you can do about that. It's a great shot from range. But they would still be disappointed with the fact they let 2 go in, because I'm sure that was the other message at halftime, was keep that pressure on up front, but don't slip back here either. Yeah.
But the second one also is just a great free kick. I mean,
I mean, they both go in off the post.
Yeah,
I actually think the second Mariners goal, Curto could have done better, because that's his side. But it's gone off the post. So if he's going to do better, he still might not save it. So yeah, it was just a really nicely taken free kick.
Yeah. So I'm less concerned about the quality of that, but just the fact that they got into a position where they could shoot. I think.
Yeah.
So talk us through the fifth goal.
Yeah. So was number 5. Sing? That was Libby. Libby Kikache's first goal. So. Mundy has played a ball down the right-hand side, which the defenders thought had gone out, and Mulvey was complaining to the lino that it had gone out. The lino said, no, it hasn't gone out. Roy was the only one alive to this. So Roy goes and collects the ball, takes it into the box, and does a low, hard cross across the top of the box, diagonally. Williams does a beautiful step over, completely soul-sells his
Apparently,
defender.
Apparently Libby was calling for that all day.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Nice. And then, yeah, Libby goes in at the back post towards the top of the box. There's a defender right there. So that defender, if Libby is calling for that, that defender needs a word, because that's absolutely horrendous defending. Great finish from Libby, though.
Right foot.
Right foot, first time, bottom left-hand corner. Kennedy has no chance. That's lovely. That's a lovely, lovely finish. I think that's probably the best goal of the night for us.
Yeah, it's certainly the best team goal. But the fact that they switched off when they saw the ball trickling out and didn't actually make sure it went out, that to me was just – that's a schoolboy lapse. Yes.
Well, and I think you were playing it – it was a very young side out there. They're already down by 4. I'm not surprised that's the sort of
No, I'm not.
But I think that's the sort of lapse an inexperienced side getting pumped makes.
For me, that's where your older heads, your leadership has just got to be stepping in and going – we need to get for every ball, every 50-50, we have to make sure we're in this game, even if it's just contesting the ball.
Yeah. So number 6 happened a few minutes later, so about the 56th minute. I think Libby was about 51st. The 6th goal was about the 56th minute, and which was Sarpreet's first goal. So he has picked up the ball on around the centre circle, and there's no defenders. There's literally no one in front of him. He just runs.
They just keep backtracking. And it was it wasn't even their defensive line that was backtracking. It was their midfield in front of their defensive line.
Yep.
They stayed apart, so they gave them the width and backtracked and almost ended up with like 6 men in a line and no one going to ball.
And then it took eventually when 2 of them did go, so one of those defenders did stop and step forward, and one of the other ones, midfielders came across from the side. Sarpreet's like, well, I'm at the top of the box now. I'll just pass it into the goal. Ended. And literally passed it into the goal.
Yeah, left-footed, side foot.
Yep, absolutely.
Near post.
Lovely. Easiest goal he's going to score his entire career.
Yeah, Kennedy must have been fuming by that stage.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I can understand that too. And then 2 minutes later, number seven came along, which, let's be honest, after many, many years of us chanting, we want seven, to see the seventh one go in the 59th minute of a game, that was something special. I really enjoyed that moment, and it was a good goal too. So Louis Fenton has won the ball in a tackle, and the ball has fallen straight to Sarpreet Singh. So Louis makes a tackle, gets up, and does a lung-busting run to get into the box. Libby carries the ball, cuts inside, and attracts two defenders, and does this beautiful little outside-of-the-foot little chippy pass into Fenton, who's completely unmarked in the box, waits the ball to come past him, and smashes it between Kennedy's legs. And for number seven, it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant goal. Really, really well worked between the two young guys.
Yep, and really, really nice reward for a good run that Louis makes, because he does. He wins the ball very deep back upfield and makes the run, and it gets rewarded, and he just slots it home. Perfect.
It was. Yeah, it's
Should we give Louis credit here too? Because this is not the first time he's done this. He's been doing this all year. It's just good to see he finally has a full season without an injury, and has shown that actually the glimpses we've seen of him before, they're legit. He's actually an A-League player, easy, and you know he could make a real big career for himself.
This is like his third goal of the season now, doing exactly this,
ghosting in as a wingback.
That's it. Just shows what kind of confidence he's got from the way Rudan's been coaching them and teaching them, I think, as well. So after Fenton's goal were the two Mariners goals that we talked about, which was that beautiful, beautiful, and I personally think goal of the match. Like Libby's was our best, but the goal of the match was the first one for the Mariners, with a curling shot with from quite a long way out and curling it off the post. So it was really, really, I think that was Clisby, was it?
That sounds right.
Yeah, okay. And then they scored the free kick a couple of minutes later. I don't know exactly
who scored that one. Young English guy from Bolton, is it? Or there's two English 18-year-old English guys that they've got over there, and one of them's the defender, the other one's the attacker.
Yeah. So at that time, of course, we were all thinking the comeback's on and they'll score another five and we'll have a 7-all draw, because we're Phoenix fans, it's the way we think. But to be fair, after that second goal, and that was probably, bar the first 5 minutes, that was the only period of domination that the Mariners had in the rest of the game, probably totaling about 10 minutes all up of the 90, which is, goes to show why they're losing 8-2. From that point onwards, again, it was all us. And Roy had a one-on-one where he's hit the outside of the post. There was others.
He needs that hat-trick, eh? I feel like
if he had got the fourth time this season, he has scored two goals. And that was, if you're ever going to get a hat-trick, that was the game to do it in. So he's got two assists, he's got the own goal, and he's got two goals himself. How he hasn't got the hat-trick, I don't know.
Yeah, there was a funny point. I was watching down in Four Kings, and Singh gets his second, and we quite loudly started joking, Singh is going to get his hat-trick and Roy's still going to miss out. Because the chances were there. You were still thinking there's a lot of time for people to score some goals here, but it's going to be just Roy's luck that Singh will come in and get a hattie, and Roy will still be going, how have I not got it?
Yeah.
How does this keep happening?
Our seventh went in the 59th minute. There was still half an hour to play. Yep. So there was every chance of us scoring another three in there, and Sarpreet could easily have scored three of them because he was getting some great positions.
Yep. Yeah, I wasn't surprised at all that the game fell off at the end, because it was just so end-to-end. They must have covered some yards by that 60th minute, in defence and attack. And it was interesting to see a game that was that attack-dominated. We don't tend to see those sorts of things in the A-League. It tends to be a blowout either way, but this was kind of just – I don't get the Mariners going toe-to-toe with us. That just seems stupid, but –
Yeah. Okay, so the last goal was like the 87th minute, I think, and it was Sarpreet's second. And this was, once again, Burgess picks up the ball in our own half from a challenge, and he runs. And he isn't challenged again until he gets to the top of the Mariners' box. So he's taken 60 metres before a player has come close to challenging him. And when they do come close to challenging him, he feeds it to Shepherd, who has the first touch of a member of his flock. And he does manage to, as he's falling backwards, get a toe to it, which keeps the ball away from the keeper, and rolls it out to Sarpreet, who drills it between Kennedy's legs again for number eight.
So, I thought the sheriff had –
Shepherd?
He did brilliantly holding off the defender on his shoulder as the ball came through. I thought he did brilliantly there. And then that mangled touch, I was like, for the love of God, just put it in the net.
Yeah, something, he deserved a goal for that, for the play, all that play, bar his touch. Because his touch was as bad as mine. So, yeah, it was really bad.
Good vision to get the extra bit on it to get it across for someone else to shoot, though. That was good, unselfish play. Because at that point, he could have still tried to put his foot through it while on the ground or something, and it wouldn't have happened. But he kind of saw, actually, there's some options out here, and made it happen.
Yeah, I don't know how many assists he's got this year.
It's quite a few.
It's quite a few for fairly minimal minutes. I mean, he's still not getting in a half an hour a game.
Yeah, but and as people keep saying, we should start him, who are you going to drop?
Yeah.
Who are you, like, you're going to take out Roy? No, you're not. He's a leading goal scorer in the league. You're going to take out Williams? Well, he once he found his first, he scored 7.
Yep.
You know, he's scoring goals, and
he's being part Shepherd, of a good
Shepherd
attack.
Is not a 10, so you can't take him out for Singh. So he has to be out the front. So as a plan B, great, keep him as a plan B. He's got decent wheels for a man of his size. He generally has a pretty good touch, and he's certainly got a great passing vision. Yeah. So as a guy coming off the bench when you need something extra, absolutely, he's the guy that you want.
Well, I think that's the thing with Killian. We've seen him be very effective in that role. Every time he's come on, bar probably one game, he's been excellent. He's created goals almost immediately. He's certainly changed the kind of impetus up front every single time. And while it might be amazing to imagine 90 minutes of him doing that, we don't know whether he's got 90 minutes in his legs. We don't know whether he can do 90 minutes that, but we do know Williams and Roy are doing well, and Killian's doing well at that job. So I don't know why we'd change it just for the sake of changing it. If we get an injury, you know, if Roy or Williams go down injured, then he's a perfectly good option to go in there. But I don't think we need to force it. I think we just see how it goes, because what we're doing at the moment's working.
And he's getting minutes.
For all of them.
Yeah, he is getting minutes, and we're scoring goals.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, we've had a dry run again against the top teams. We didn't score heavily against the top teams, but you don't score heavily against the teams that are playing out at the top of the league.
Yep.
You know, it's one of those things. So I think the fact that we scored 8 in this just goes to show that actually we do have plenty of goals in those legs, and there's every opportunity moving forward that we're going to have a few more games where we do score quite a few.
Yeah, my only criticism, I think, of the Sheriff is that he isn't pressing for that place. You know, he's not – 1 or 2 goals along with those assists, and all of a sudden I think he'd be getting 25 minutes and really kind of – I think it would help the rest of the attack as well to be able to, you know that there's someone who go, you know, if you're off, mate, I'm taking your spot.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what we want from him, because he's a very personable guy and he plays a nice style of football, and he's a visa player, so we have higher expectations of him as well.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting one, because I do think if you sent him out there as a starting striker and said you're the guy we expect the goals from, I think we might be seeing a slightly different version of him. I think in this match in particular, it was easy to see. There's that chance late on where he ends up playing it across to Roy, where you can just see he's being unselfish. He knows he's got a striker in good form there who's on 2 goals, and he could have a lash at the front post and probably score it. But instead, he knows his role isn't that. He's not the man they're expecting 25 out of the season. He's a guy playing a support role. But I think if you sent him out there and said, you're the man, we might be seeing a slightly different version of him where he probably would be scoring a few more because he knows that's what's been asked of him, rather than we want you to do a bit of everything out there.
Yeah, fair.
So who knows? We'll see. If he gets that start, we'll find out.
Yeah. Other good points out of the game. Kellen Elliott and Stensness get debuts, which is good. They probably wouldn't have got those runs if it had been a 1-goal game going in late. I would love to Roy to have got the hat-trick so he could have had a rest. Take him off, get your hat-trick, take him off and put Sheridan on with Williams and see how those two go together as well. Yeah. That could have been another option. So that's a bit of a downer. But, yeah, there was – I mean, the
goals
are
going
to dominate.
I can't believe we're talking the negative parts of an 8-2 win.
Yeah, I'm stretching, I really should just let it go.
Well, Burgess, also very
Burgess
good.
Burgess was amazing.
I think we've talked about how much space he was in that midfield, but he still made the most fit. He got a chance in there and he looked good.
You can only play those in front of you.
Yep.
And with Singh getting a yellow card and being suspended for the game this weekend, he's given himself the opportunity to say,
absolutely,
actually, I'm the 10. I'm the 10 against a Wanderers team who have started to play better and are resurgent and are doing well, but we are playing good football and he can be our 10.
Well, let's go on to the Wanderers then. They had a good 4-1 win over the Roar. I don't want to call them the hapless Raw, but they're certainly feeling a bit that way.
The Mariners are hapless.
Yeah, but Raw are not significantly better than them. They just don't. They just seem to be a level below right across the park. But in saying that, Wanderers did have a significant number of personnel changes, and it didn't seem to matter. They're still playing Boer off the bench, who I thought has looked pretty good when he's played for them. But Rowley seems to be on fire at the moment. It's, I think, 4 in his last 5 games or something stupid like that.
I heard a rumour that Popper's looking at him for Perth for next season.
Yeah, because, you know, Perth don't have enough players and certainly haven't hit their cap twice over.
No comment.
Oh, it just annoys me that anyone thinks that they're still under their cap.
Yeah, maybe someone should have a word with Tony P.
Yeah, wouldn't be the first time. Anyway, Wanderers still playing quite well. I think that if, you know, Mariners were a potential banana skin for us, that the old Phoenix would have tripped, gone for a wee skate on. This is kind of a bit of a... It's a bit of a mid-sized rock to hop over.
Yeah, I'm more worried about this one than I was about Mariners. I think my concern with the Mariners game was that we'd play down to their level a bit. I think even doing that, we were still going to win. But, you know, we ended up doing it 8-2, but it felt like one of those ones where we should be doing them by 6 goals and instead we'll do it 2-1 and it'll look much scrappier than it should. But I was never worried about, you know, dropping the points. This one does worry me. This feels more like the banana skin that we potentially do skid on. It's a team that are playing some good football, but we should be better than. Whereas Mariners weren't playing good football. There's no redeeming features there at all. This one feels more worrying. And you've got Rowley in good form. We love letting, you know, our former players score, you know, significant goals against us. It just feels perfect storm enough that it might happen here. But I think Rudan's done such a good job of making sure we're not that Phoenix of old, that it's unlikely to happen. I think we won't be going out there with that being a possibility they're even entertaining.
I still have a nasty little feeling in the back of my head because the Wanderers are playing well enough that they're leaving Yeboah and Balmuhan on the bench. That is a good bench. That is a lot of attacking prowess there that can be brought on later. And it does say something about the team that they're putting out there at the moment, if you can keep those guys at the bench. Remember, Balmuhan cut us up. He was the guy that basically took the game for it at the stadium the last time. And I think that worries me somewhat. But as you say, they're only just coming to form lately. So
yeah, we haven't beat them this season, have we? We drew with them over there and lost to them here. Also, one positive, I guess, is we're the last game of the weekend. So the teams, all those teams around us, the Adelaide, City and Newcastle, we're going to know what they've done and we're going to know what we have to do in relation to those. I think we have to win. Personally, I think we have to win, especially with Newcastle being the following game. We have to win it. But you're right, it's going to be a much tougher ask. I think I'm still going to predict we'll win, but I think it's going to be more like a 3-2 because I still see goals in both of these teams. I think it's more like a 3-2 than it's going to be more like than a 1-0 sort of scenario.
So Wanderers are well down the pack. They're 8th at the moment and probably not threatening 7th particularly unless
they won't make the playoffs.
No, definitely not the playoffs, but certainly not threatening 7th for a little while. 7th, the Jets. And they're 2 points behind City now, I believe.
2 points. No, 3 points behind. They're on 28. City's on 31. Adelaide's on 31, and we're on 33. I think that's right.
No, we're on the same points as Adelaide, but goal difference, I believe.
Oh, is it? Okay. And we're 5 points clear of Newcastle. I know that.
Yep, so here we go. We are on 31 points.
Oh, my bad.
On a +5 goal difference. Adelaide, 5th on 31 points with a +1 goal difference. Melbourne City in 6th, 30 points, +1 goal difference. Newcastle gets 4 points behind City. So this is kind of the interesting part of the season where if a couple of results go one way or the other, you could see a, you know, the proverbial 6-pointer. Adelaide are playing. Adelaide played Sydney the last game and lost 2-0. Yeah. But
who have they got this week?
Oh, really?
Sorry, I think we look at this. If we lose to the Wanderers and Newcastle win, then that game with Newcastle becomes huge because they can go past us if they beat us.
Well, yeah,
so I mean, these we've got 3 games left in Wellington of the 6. and the two of those, the next two. Those two are massive.
The thing for me at this point is we've ended up in a position with that result where now three teams have to go past us. Mm. It's no longer will the Jets catch us. We've actually got ourselves ahead of two other sides as well, which I think is the important part here.
I keep losing sight of that, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think even if somehow the Jets catch us, there's actually still City and Adelaide who might not be catching us. And so I think that's the thing to remember here is that actually there's now three teams below us. So we need all three of them to have the results go their way and us to skid on a banana skin of sorts.
And
whereas if we keep doing the right things, they don't catch us anyway. And even if we do, chances of all three of them or all three of them getting the results they need to overtake us, much less likely than it was when we were sitting in sixth with just the Jets chasing us down.
From what I remember of the draw, that we have actually a better draw.
We have the easiest run coming in.
Their game this week is against Perth. So
that's a tough one for them. We've still got we've got them to play over there. So I think that's after Newcastle. Then we have Brisbane, Melbourne City is here. And the last game of the season is in Perth.
Yep.
So we kind of want it sewn up before that game against Melbourne City, I think, if we can, because that game against Melbourne City could become quite the
Well, this is the round to the do game. It. We've yeah. got Wanderers. Adelaide have Perth and Melbourne have Sydney. So basically this is where we can get a little bit of a break on and then hopefully hold them off.
Who's Newcastle got?
Newcastle has... They have the Mariners. But again, as Dave says, that isn't the issue.
I'm trying to see where we're at beyond seventh. Basically, I'm always going to look at us beyond seventh because I want us in the playoffs. I think fourth is a bonus. I want us to finish in the top six. Don't care where at this stage.
Well, I mean, let's assume that Adelaide loses to Perth, City loses to Sydney. That basically leaves them on exact same points. Probably the Jets will win. That puts them up three. If we get our 3 points, it's basically we bump up three. We're now 3 points clear of Adelaide, 4 points clear of City, and still 5 points clear of Newcastle. So things start to kind of break our way there. So and hopefully that puts a bit of pressure on the teams that are trying to chase because trying to make up that difference now. And especially
these next two matches are enormous. Against Wanderers and Newcastle. Two wins there, and that's us guaranteed in the six.
So let's wrap up the rest of this round. Jets had a good 2-0 win against the Victory. A little unexpected, but they're starting to play some good football now. Ernie Macon getting on one of his runs, I think. City had a good 2-2 draw against the Glory. I mean, Glory, to be fair, were due a result not to go their way. You know, that's fair props to the City. I mean, they've got McLaren obviously banging in goals for them, which is painful to watch, but yeah. So apart from that, I mean, I guess we can go on to Handy Prem or...
Probably talk about Dylan Fox leaving the club today.
Yeah, true.
So obviously he had a season-ending injury and this was the last year of his contract. So I can only assume because he's left by mutual consent, it's... to finish his rehab back home in Australia and then probably play NPL once he's had a stand down. That kind of makes sense to me. There's every chance there's discussions about him coming back next season like there have been with other players and that have done this. So.
The other thing that people often forget about in these situations is that there will have been insurance cover as well. So a season-ending injury will probably mean it's very easy for the club to pay up whatever was remaining on his contract because it'll be covered by insurance. And so he can go now and go back and do his rehab wherever he likes and play NPL and do all that kind of stuff with the freedom, start the stand-down period earlier, all that kind of stuff with no loss to the club at all. It's not like there's a downside to us because it will be insurance anyway.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the kid, but I think it's probably the only way that this makes sense, that this actually would all work out in his benefit.
He needs game time.
Yeah, well, yeah. I only feel sorry for him if this really is a release and a see you later. I wouldn't be, as you say, surprised that there's some discussion about see how you go over there and give us a call six months from now because we'll be interested. Because I don't think we're done with him. I think he has some A-League potential and I wouldn't be surprised if it's back with us.
I mean, we could remember he very nearly won Player of the Year last year.
Player of the Year.
We did win Young Player of the Year, but nearly won the...
They didn't win Young Player of the Year. Matt Redington won Young Player of the Year last year. Yeah.
But Dylan, yeah. I thought it was Young Player. Yeah. You'd think I wasn't there.
Alternative facts with Frosty.
Yeah. Fake news. So let's get on to the handy prem. Obviously, T-Dub's result first. Unfortunately, a loss to Auckland City. Not too unexpected, 2-1.
Wasn't the birthday present I was hoping for, but it was kind of
fair.
It was kind of a fair result. It was actually quite a good game to watch. I really enjoyed it. Auckland were probably good for the win. You'd say they probably edged it, but you wouldn't have begrudged T-Dub something out of that. They played some good football and created plenty of opportunities themselves. So you were there. What did you reckon?
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a good game to watch, but it definitely felt like one of the teams is going to win. It wasn't going to finish a draw. Both teams wanted the win.
They were certainly playing for
the
it.
Other
they're,
end.
They're both
right,
playing,
right to the death. Both teams were playing for more goals, which made it entertaining. But I mean, I don't know. I am probably one-eyed in this, but it always feels frustrating watching Auckland City because they whine so much and they go down so easily and they get rewarded for it so often. I mean, it's good gamesmanship. They win that stake every time. I mean, I watch it from the sideline. Like I say, I'm probably a bit biased in that, but I keep thinking to myself, how are the referees giving these fouls? Because there's just so little there. But it works for them. And when you're getting those fouls, of course you're going to keep doing it. And that... particularly when it comes to that last kind of phase of closing out the game, you can waste a bit more time and you can ease some pressure. And, you know, that was always going to shade it for them when they had that little bit of a lead and their nose in front and the gamesmanship came into play. So
that's it. It's talking about the gamesmanship, they see right at the very, very end where one of the players goes down with
two of the players go down. Yeah.
So their right back just lies down and Anthony Riley, the referee, comes up and calls the trainer on just straight away.
Yeah.
And the...
It's because it was the second player to lie down. Another one had... lay down and waste a bit of time and then went, oh no, I don't need a trainer.
Yep.
Just as that's happening, a second player lies down and so the ref rightly.
Yep. He calls one, say, come on, and Te Arawha Hudson Wihonga was going, you can't do that. Well, actually the ref can do what he wants, he's in charge. So if he thinks the trainer needs to come on, the trainer needs to come on. And when the trainer didn't come on and eventually yellow carded the player, it wasn't going to make a difference anyway. There was less than 30 seconds.
There was
play.
Quite some words exchanged between
lots of words exchanged.
Between the fourth and the coaching staff on the bench there about the fact they were telling the physio not to go on the field despite the ref saying you need to get him on here.
Yep. And then there was Te Arawha Hudson Wihonga having a chat with the fans in the crowd afterwards as well about the validity of the diving that and time wasting that Auckland were doing and to excess. So it ruined what was a good performance from them and a deserved victory. We talked about they probably edged it. They probably deserved it. Take the points. Don't be dicks. And they were just being dicks about it and it annoyed me.
I think if you're a City fan, you're going, that's just good work though. That's the thing I find hard to talk in an unbiased fashion about, because I feel like you, I find that very frustrating and I don't like watching a team that goes out to play that way, but I suspect I would probably say that differently if it was my team. I wouldn't be able to see the wood for the trees.
I called the yellow card for Dura earlier this season, time wasting, as one of the best yellow cards I've ever seen. So, it's definitely a biased view from me. But it was very, very irritating when it literally is the last 30 seconds and Auckland had the ball and it was going down the other end and the referee was blowing the whistle. There was literally no need for it. It was just frustrating.
And slightly more positive news for a Wellington side. Wenix got up. They got a nice 3-2 win over Hamilton Wanderers. That's their second win this season when it looked like for all money they weren't going to get anything in the wins column. But two wins, it's not too bad for a development side in my view, considering that the youth of the boys, even though they are units, every single one of them, they are not small kids.
Nutrition and professional development, basically. That's what shows when you get it from a young age. Those boys have played some good football. They've been a little unlucky in some of those games, a couple of 3-2 losses where they should have closed it out and didn't from a 2-0 lead. So there's a bits here and there. So they're young, basically.
But the fact that they did close out a 3-2 result makes me kind of positive signs, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what they're actually trying to achieve with the team, getting those wins isn't the top thing on their list. It's nice for them. It's always nice to win. You don't lose every game.
Teaches them game management.
It certainly does.
It's an interesting argument to make because it's exactly that criticism that some people make of them being in the league, of having development side there who doesn't have the goal of winning games. And you'd have to argue those people potentially have a point based on the way the season's gone. That side have not shown a desire to actually play the league. They've shown desire to go out there and play some decent football, but not to be playing in the spirit of the competition, I guess, which I think is a fair criticism there. So it's one that'll be interesting to watch the space and see how that goes, whether there is some pressure on them to, you know, actually show they deserve their spot there, because, I mean, unlike the same argument being made in the A-League, I think there are teams that could happily step up to that spot there. This is not a particularly commercial league. It's propped up by money. Should that money be going to developing a reserve team for a professional outfit, or should it be going to letting other club-based teams or franchises be involved?
I think Olay is the perfect
on there.
No, not at all.
Yeah. I think Olay is the perfect example of this, because look at their players. Last year, East had a competitive team without anybody from Olay. And Auckland this year has a competitive team without anybody from Olay. Those players are just finding a space where they need to. Olay could produce a team into that, into the National League quite easily. So, yeah, they're only playing up in East because that's the place that they can get them. And those teams, so East would have a team without them, and Auckland City would have a team without them. They don't need them up there.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's quite interesting.
Speaking of East, so they had a 3-1 win over Tasman.
That guarantees them second place.
Yep. Which is problematic for T-dubs. They really don't want to get City in the semis.
There was watching that game, I don't think they should be worried about City in the semis. I think they can beat City. I think they showed enough on Saturday to say they could beat City. That has to be their day, and City not quite play up to their standard, but they showed they had plenty there to do it. They do want to get Easts in the semi-finals, though, because they have beaten Easts twice this season, and I think they are a better side than Easts when they play to their full potential. Easts take the match, I think, a little too personally because of the relationship they have, and effectively it being a third Wellington team based in Auckland. Then I think there's a little, I think they need to look at a little more less, with a little less passion, and just play the game in front of them. And I think they would, East would probably win. T-dubs have to win the grand final now or the Oceania Champions League to get back into the Champions League next season.
The fly in the ointment for getting that third spot is Canterbury, who had a good win over Waitakere. 4-1. That's obviously going to help with goal difference if it comes down to that.
Goal difference doesn't matter. The Canterbury has the tiebreaker.
Oh, is it head-to-head first?
They had the victory over T-dubs and a draw, so it's head-to-head.
Right, okay. And rounding it out, Southern had a tall draw with Hawke's Bay in the game that really doesn't affect things at all. So that's the end of the football part. We've obviously got, as Ziggy mentioned before, we've got tickets to give away. Dave, do you want to talk us through?
Sure. So we generously have been donated two bronze tickets to the testimonial dinner. These tickets have been donated by Julian, who most of you will know as that German guy who has been on the podcast and also around games in New Zealand and, you know, bit of a character. And so huge thank you to him. He obviously is not in the country at the moment, but wanted to support the dinner anyway. So he's bought some tickets and is generously letting some of you listeners have them. So what we're going to do is, if you send an email to podcast@yellowfever.co.nz and give us some details of your favourite Juro memories. I suspect there's probably some juicy stories out there from a few fans who've interacted with Juro over the years. And so
we'd prefer non-football related Juro stories. Wow, if you've got them.
Yeah, we'll take anything. But anything you email through will get you entered. But the better the stories, the more likely we are to share them on next week's episode. So just because of the timing, we will obviously announce who the winner is on the next episode, but we will email whoever that is before that, just because we have to get the tickets to them and stuff in time. So if you can get your entries through by the end of Sunday night, and we'll announce the winner on Monday, but you'll hear that from us on whenever we record next week.
So that's Sunday the 17th?
After the Phoenix game.
Yeah.
As a bonus, you'll get to have a coffee with Ben Sigmund to collect them. So
you'll have to buy the coffee for
Well, Ziggy. I recall him suggesting that he may buy
I think it's the coffee. Least someone can do is buy Ziggy a coffee.
Yeah, that would be good. So yeah, so you'll be collecting them from him. So and having a coffee with him as a bonus.
So I guess that wraps it up for tonight. It's been a good week, boys.
It has. It's nice to have such a massive win after such a tough run of games.
Yeah, and the team's coming back to Wellington, so that'll be nice after 5 weeks.
Yeah,
and I won't make it.
Late game on a Sunday, though.
That's right. It's your other half's birthday, isn't it? 40th.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, you'll be fine. I'll be at the game.
I know.
My wife surely is not having that party on the Sunday. It's just
yeah unfortunately, foolish.
My wife's going to the party. I'm going to the game.
I tried on the Saturday, but it did not wash.
She was born on St. Patrick's Day. The dinner, the birthday party is on St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
So you're calling in sick on Monday?
No, I've taken the day off.
2 days?
Yeah, that's a smart move.
I have taken the day off. I planned that a couple of months ahead just in case.
That's a very smart move.
So that's all from us. Say goodbye, boys.
Goodbye, boys.
Bye.
Big time, boys.
Oh my God.
Saving it with your ass brings you.
St. Paddy's present brings you.
Siggy being disappointed with his son's footballing ability brings you.